Welcome to another week of Ball Street, the QBL Stock Exchange. I'm your host, Brett Ford, joined by our analyst, Eric Romoff. Eric, how was your week eight from a fantasy perspective, from a football perspective, from a real life perspective?
I think we've talked about this heading into prior shows. One in my league of record, so everything is great from a fantasy perspective. A little bit more of a split bill than it was in weeks past. A lot of blowouts in week eight, so made for kind of a weird DFS and betting slate overall. But honestly, any week with football is a great week in my book.
Yeah, I pulled out a huge win on Monday Night Football. I went into the Chiefs game trailing by 50 points, had Mahomes, Rashi Rice, and the Chiefs defense, and was able to eke out a win on the Chiefs interception. The final play of the game made a huge difference. So I ended up scoring about 50. Yeah, it was almost 55 points on the dot that those three combined for in a half PPR. So it came down to the final play.
Sunday night and Monday night sweats are maybe peak fantasy football vibes. I was on the other side of it. I was leading by about 60 points against a team that had Tucker Kraft, DK Metcalf, Chris Boswell. It's just like I won by less than 2 points, but just like sitting there sweating it down to the last minute is what it's all about, right?
Yeah, me and Jay DeFalconer in the Discord were both sitting there with Mahomes and Rice and the Chiefs defense, and kind of just willing each other to victory in the Discord as it was happening. So it was a great community moment and a great personal moment. I improved to 5-3 in that league. It was a huge difference between being 5-3 and 4-4. So tied for the division lead now. We're moving forward.
Love it.
Like you said, a lot of blowouts and a handful of important injuries to some players and marked by one of the most devastating injuries from a fantasy landscape, from a real life football landscape. Cam Scatabue goes down with a dislocated ankle. We assume it's dislocated with a severe ankle injury, probably out for the season, maybe out for more than that. What does that do to the landscape of the New York Giants backfield? And do we have a moment of silence for Jay Felicio and his Giants, or?
Oh man, we absolutely do. I know that Jay and Giant fans alike were reveling in this youth movement for their G-men, and even if their team was kind of middle of the pack or building a little bit of momentum, they had these exciting young pieces to get to get wrapped up in, and to see him go down in that fashion was just such a gut punch. Like he's such a fun player to roster, to watch, to have in the NFL. In true Scatabue fashion, his foot was pointing the wrong direction and he was still trying to get his teammates to help him up so he can walk this thing off. His ankle is very much so dislocated. I think there's reporting that he is in fact out for the season. So now we are heading into some sort of rotation between Tyrone Tracy and Devin Singletary there in the Giants backfield. And I think it's going to be a bit of a mess for those that are trying to navigate that circumstance.
Now, speaking of messes, the Kansas City backfield has been one that has confounded fantasy managers so far this season. Isaiah Pacheco suffered what appeared to be an MCL sprain on Monday Night Football. You have Kareem Hunt there, who scored two touchdowns on Monday night, and up-and-coming Breshard Smith, who has looked really good in the pass-catching role. Are those guys going to kind of be early down, third down back split, or do we think that maybe Breshard Smith continues to gain traction in that backfield?
Yeah, I certainly think so in the case of the latter, right? It's been a bit frustrating, rostering and waiting for this breakout with Breshard Smith, because while he's not seeing a ton of playing time, he's very much so getting specific and designed looks in this offense. And it seems like every time you bat an eye, he's breaking off a 10, 12, 15 yard gainer. And then it's being called back for a penalty. And he finishes the day with like 8 or 10 yards on total. Right. So, this certainly creates some opportunity for him to see an expanded workload. The interesting thing is, Pacheco was really getting more of that early down work, and that would project to slot over to Kareem Hunt. So I think it might just be a bit of an uptick in the case of Breshard Smith as relief duty and still, you know, still having a stranglehold on that passing down work in the offense. So the arrow pointing up for both now to a point where Hunt, I think, is more of like a week to week flex type of target, and Breshard Smith is a little bit more of a streamer, you know, if you're desperate or you've got guys out on bye week type of dart throw profile.
And then when Pacheco gets back, it's a mess again, right?
Absolutely. Almost entirely a situation to avoid when he returns, as it has been.
Now, speaking of players coming back, we've got a couple of headliner quarterbacks who could be back in action for week 9. Lamar Jackson looks like he's practicing fully again. Of course, take that with a grain of salt if it comes from the Ravens brass. They play Thursday night against the Dolphins, and then Michael Penix is kind of in a wait and see. I'll be honest, I haven't seen the most recent reports, but the Falcons play the Patriots on Sunday in Foxborough. And I'm sure Falcons fans and fantasy managers alike are all hoping Penix starts and not Kirk Cousins.
I certainly am. This experiment with the 1 week Kirk Cousins start went about as poorly as it could have. I want to give Kirko Chains a little bit of credit. You know, he's thrust in with limited reps in practice, and also finds out last minute that his best receiving option is going to be out for this game. Right, so very much so the game plan for the Dolphins shifted over to, if we stop Bijan Robinson, we stop this offense. So I do think this is the lowest of the low that we see for Kirk Cousins. But clearly, Michael Penix is a demonstrable upgrade from Kirko Chains. In the case of Lamar Jackson, I mean, depending on your definition of the word full, he got full practice in to start the week. They are kicking off on Thursday Night Football against the Dolphins. So assuming that they are being honest about his participation this go round, which I think they would be given the fines and penalties that will likely be levied against them for last week's fiasco, it should be absolutely wheels up. I've got him as my QB1 in the ranks over at QB list this week, right? The golden matchup against a Miami Dolphins defense that, apart from last week, has been an absolute doormat throughout the duration of this season.
What a run out it would be for Miami and Mike McDaniel if they somehow dodge Penix, get Kirk Cousins, and then the week after somehow dodge Lamar and get Tyler Huntley. Doesn't appear to be the case, but you know, these backup quarterbacks are saving Mike McDaniel's job.
Quite literally. I still have no idea how Mike McDaniels is employed. I mean, his seat has been hotter than the surface of the sun for a few weeks now, but you stack up some wins, especially when there's no expectation of you doing so, and you'll buy yourself a little bit of runway for sure.
We take a look at some pass catchers around the league. A handful of guys, really elite names that have gone down with injury. All four of these players did not play last week. Three of them due to injury, one of them due to bye. Texans wide receiver Nico Collins missed with a concussion. Eagles wide receiver A.J. Brown missed with a hamstring. We talked about Drake London for the Falcons. He missed with a hip. He's questionable for week 8. And then Brian Thomas Jr. entered the bye with some injuries to his shoulder, to a couple of, I guess, other ailments. Should we expect to start them heading into Sunday, the three guys of those four that do play in week 9? Or should we be looking elsewhere in the wide receiver landscape?
I'll take the easy one. Don't start AJ Brown, as he is nursing this hamstring on the bye week. He arguably is one that I have the most concern over, just given how much we've seen hamstring injuries become prevalent this season and have a tendency to linger this season. So the bye is timely for him, but no sure thing that he'll be available when he returns. Nico Collins is probably the clearest of the pictures. This was a concussion that was suffered on Monday night 2 weeks ago, so made it very unlikely he played last week. He, in fact, did not play. But we will have line of sight as soon as the first practice report on Wednesday, right? As long as he is getting out there in a limited fashion, then he should be on track to play. And there's been the requisite amount of time to where you typically see players, fall into that on-ramp, right? So I feel pretty good about his availability. Steps into a very interesting matchup against the Denver Broncos if he is able to take the field. Drake London, I think, far more of a coin flip, especially considering how late in the week last week that this ailment reared its ugly head and caused him to miss the game against Miami. He very much so seems like he is legitimately questionable heading into week number 9. And Brian Thomas Jr., I mean, maybe the murkiest of the situation, right? The reporting around what type of injury and the severity of it seems to be a bit all over the place. It makes me feel, interpreting it, like it's not as significant of an issue. And maybe this is, as much chatter as it is reporting around him. The only tricky thing with Brian Thomas Jr. is he is the one that is in the 4 o'clock window of the three that are playing this week. So going to have a couple of later game or Sunday night or Monday night alternatives on standby if you're going to ride it out for Brian Thomas Jr. this week.
Another guy who's coming off of an injury, maybe back for week 9, in that 4 o'clock window is tight end Brock Bowers for the Las Vegas Raiders. Bowers, obviously one of those guys that if he's healthy, you start. But with his recent performance, that may not be as much of a given as one would think entering the season.
Yeah, it might not be as much of a given, but it is still the reality. If Brock Bowers is out there, and I would certainly hope with how much time has passed and them coming off the bye, he should be back out there. If he's back out there, you're still clicking the button, right? Maybe there are circumstances where you found your way into an Aronde Gatson as a means to bridge the gap while he was out, and now you have a bit of a choice in front of you. In that circumstance, I'm probably trying to find a way to play both and flex one and start the other at tight end. But practically speaking, apart from those types of circumstances, if he's healthy enough to play, I don't think they're going to trot him back out there if he is not, at or near 100%. So if he's taking the field, I'm firing him up.
And one more injury before we go to break. You kind of teased this in the wide receiver section when you talked about Nico Collins' matchup against the Denver Broncos. Cornerback Patrick Surtain III is going to be out with a pectoral. Looks like he's out for multiple weeks, which means that Collins is going to line up against whoever else the Broncos trot out there, maybe Riley Moss, the Cowboys targeted quite heavily in week 8 in that matchup.
It absolutely would be Riley Moss. And for anyone who's paying attention to wide receiver cornerback matchups, he is a favorite target of ours. Essentially, whomever is running on the opposite coverage of Patrick Surtain is exactly who you want to target in terms of moving up your ranks or in the DFS streets. Riley Moss does his best turnstile impersonation out there every single week. The only thing that is a bit of a downside to going up against him is he's a bit grab happy, and we tend to not get yards for flags and penalty yardage or points for penalty yardage. So, apart from that, really a replacement level wide receiver should be able to impose their will on Riley Moss. Never mind, one of the top, 7 or 10 players in all of the NFL. Nico Collins should be set up for an absolutely massive day in a game that could have some scoring potential to it.
Yeah, flags drawn were worth fantasy points. George Pickens would be a first round pick every year, for sure.
The GOAT.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk stocks down, stocks up, buy low, sell high after this. Welcome back to Ball Street, the QB List Stock Exchange. I'm Brett Ford here with Eric Romoff. We're talking the way the market moves in fantasy football. You have a performance, your stock goes down. You have a great performance, your stock goes up. We've seen several guys fluctuate quite a bit this season. We'll start with the guys whose stock has fallen this past week. And unfortunately for most of these, these guys were in your starting lineup, especially in week 8 when you had 6 teams on bye. We'll start with a quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Baker Mayfield. Tough game on Sunday. Only threw for, I think, 168 yards. Just didn't produce the numbers that you're used to from Mayfield. And a lot of that, I think, was game script, playing the Saints and being a relatively low scoring game and kind of dominating throughout. But what do we think about Mayfield? He's been kind of this fourth quarter maven this season so far. Is there concern that he doesn't meet the MVP caliber stats that he put up last year?
A moderate amount of concern, right? I think that has much more to do with his supporting cast than anything else, right? It seems like every time one of his top flight receivers gets healthy, another one goes down, right? And more than anything, like, hats off to this guy for making it happen with a grab bag of names off the street for so many weeks, right? I think this is more so just him regressing back to the mean, normalizing from some out of his mind performances in the weeks that preceded the last couple, right? If you look at those games, go back and watch the tape, every single one of those games, there was some ridiculous escape from the pocket that he managed to, you know, scamper for 15 yards and convert for a big first down on third or fourth down, or some Hail Mary ball that he chucked up there that his receiver happened to come down with, right? And those things are inherently fluky, right? So I think, you know, those extreme heights are probably a little bit too lofty for Baker Mayfield. But I do think, as we see Emeka Ogbuka continue to get a little bit more healthy, we'll see about the availability of guys like Chris Godwin, but also as we see Bucky Irving return to this offense, hopefully at some point soon, I think all that becomes a bit more of a normalizing factor or a stabilizing factor. And instead, we see more weeks of him kind of landing in that QB sort of 7 to 10 range instead of spiking up to QB2 and then falling back to QB20 and a little bit more of a sporadic spread on his productivity.
So with their upcoming schedule, week 9, they're on the bye. But then week 10, they come out, they face the New England Patriots, the Buffalo Bills, and the Los Angeles Rams in their next 3 games. So kind of tough sells as far as defense goes for those 3. And it gets better after that, but a little bit of concern for Baker, certainly, with his upcoming schedule.
I mean, not cakewalk matchups by any means, right? But also circumstances where the Buccaneers are going to need to score if they want to be competitive in those games, right? So tougher matchups, better game scripts, you know, kind of a net neutral from my vantage point.
Oh, we'll move on to running back, where Tony Pollard is seeding some of the volume that made him so elite at the beginning of the season. Tyjae Spears is back off IR. He outsnapped Pollard in this game against the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday. Now, part of that could have been the game script. Titans were getting dominated pretty much the whole game, but they are the Tennessee Titans, so that could be kind of a consistent theme throughout the rest of the season. How concerned are we with Pollard with the way he's kind of tumbled the past couple of weeks with the emergence of Spears?
Quite scared, quite concerned, right? I mean, the whole argument for Tony Pollard up until the recent weeks was volume, right? You know, the world needs RB2s, and this guy is going to get, you know, 15, 18, 20-ish touches a week. You know, he'll finish as an RB2 pretty much every single week. And now that volume is legitimately in jeopardy, both on merit, right? Tajay Spears looks like the more effective and explosive weapon out of the backfield, but also on game script, right? When they are, as they often will be in passing situations, they are clearly erring on the side, rightfully, of Tajay Spears. So that volume is legitimately in question, and in turn, so is the entirety of the argument for Tony Pollard's viability from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, and it's not going to get easier for the Titans as, you know, they stare down a gauntlet for the rest of the season. I don't think that really looking at this, I'm not sure that they're favored maybe against Cleveland in week 14, but other than that, I don't see a game that they're favored. Even the Saints in week 17, I kind of like New Orleans there, especially if Tyler Shuck is still under center. But they face the Chargers in week 9. They have a bye in week 10. And then Houston, Seattle, Jacksonville. That's some darn good defenses and darn good teams. It's going to be a struggle for Pollard.
A lot of third and long in that schedule. A lot of third and long for the Titans.
Yeah, so maybe that makes me have to rethink one of my buy lows, actually, now that you mentioned that. We'll move on to the Green Bay Packers wide receiver room. Romeo Dobbs, Matthew Golden, the whole crew there. You know, Jordan Love had an amazing night on Sunday night as the Packers, you know, kind of ran roughshod for the win. But a lot of that was to Tucker Kraft, and the wide receivers were kind of just ancillary pieces. What do we think about the wide receiver room there, and how do you decide who to roster and who to cut and who to pursue when you talk about Dobbs and Golden and the rest of the crew?
Yeah, I think the way that you make that determination is you look at the guy who's already on your roster and you dance with the one who brought you there, right? Because if you're trying to play whack-a-mole with, you know, who it's going to be in any given week, you're more likely to whiff than you are anything else. If we look at last week alone, which is material because it marks the return of Christian Watson, we see five different guys with 20% snap share or more, right? Like, this is going to be a hot mess for the duration. This very much so was the fatal flaw in the argument for guys like Matthew Golden heading into the season, right? Incredibly talented, arguably the best route runner that they have on the team. Certainly the highest draft capital they've spent on a receiver in quite a long time, but steps right into one of the most crowded wide receiver rooms in all of the NFL with a quarterback who loves to distribute the ball, right? I mentioned those five guys at 20% or higher. That's just in the receiving core. Let's not forget Tucker Kraft is roaming around out there seeing 60 snaps a game and getting the first pickings at all of these scoring opportunity, right? So I don't think that there is going to be really any clear, you know, one or 1A to Tucker Kraft's goal, the Tucker Kraft one that emerges from this room. So if you're rostering one and you're in a position where you've been starting them, I think you just have to kind of remain pot committed to that, knowing that those weeks are going to come and there's going to be some rough and bumpy roads along the way.
I know that you're saying kind of ride with the horse that brought you or dance with the girl that brought you, however you want to phrase that. But I know we're not a waiver wire show, but man, Christian Watson is kind of an appealing ad on the wire, especially you know, after seeing him in the role that he basically vacated, just coming back to pretty much the same role where they're sending him on go routes and fly routes and all those things. Pretty much every time they throw him the ball, it's for 20 yards or more. I love to see that. I was hoping that was what we would see from Matthew Golden. It has not been for the majority of the season. So Christian Watson is at least a little bit interesting in deeper leagues.
Perfectly fair. And a guy that I wrote up in some of my first come first serve and deep waiver target articles of weeks past, the argument for him is, of all the guys that you're going to run down this laundry list who are receiving targets from Jordan Love, he clearly has the most non-duplicative skill set, right? Like, they are going to use him in a way that they won't use anybody else, right? The argument against is, going back to a name you mentioned before, George Pickens, he just has a crazy boom or bust profile, right? So there are going to be some 20, 25, 30 point weeks where you feel like you're going to live forever and you're the king of the world. And there's going to be some other weeks where he sees three targets that are all, you know, 20 or 25 yards down the field and they all hit the turf and you're going to be looking at a goose egg, right? So very much so the same case with the rest of the Packers receivers. Like, whichever decision you make, I think just buckle up and know that you're riding the roller coaster with that guy.
Yeah, if I'm only getting three targets, like if I have a Green Bay Packers wide receiver and I know I'm only getting three targets, give me the one that's going 25 yards downfield.
Correct. Yes, that is the correct. That is the correct position.
Speaking of wide receivers, we move to Los Angeles, where Quentin Johnson and Keenan Allen didn't look so hot last week. Ladd McConkey and Aronda Gadsden now, and of course Kamani Vidal also. All three of those guys had really good nights, and Johnson and Allen were left out in the cold a little bit. What do we do with this Chargers offense now that there's so many mouths to feed?
Yeah. I can't say this is all that surprising, right? We assumed that, you know, Keenan Allen was going to have age catch up to him over over the course of the season, and he was the least involved of that trio from a route participation and snap standpoint. So it looks like you know, his productivity is just kind of normalizing to that reality. Quentin Johnston, another player that has a little bit more of that boom or bust profile, and at least for me, I could never get comfortable around the idea of relying on him to actually catch the balls that are thrown his way. And we're starting to see a little bit of that variance show up. So in my mind, it's really Ladd McConkey is going to be the one that I am ranking the highest out of those pass catchers week in and week out. Gadsden, granted, small sample size, but looks like he has carved out a legitimate role in this offense. So he is going to be ranked as a tight end one for several weeks to come, at least until further notice. And I think that's going to leave guys like QJ and Keenan Allen as a little bit more of like fringy flex territories where you likely have guys on your bench you feel more confident starting on a week in and week out basis.
Yeah. And, you know, the one thing about Quentin Johnston is it's really hard to drop passes when you're not getting thrown the ball. So zero targets on Thursday night against the Vikings. He played really well. It was a really fun couple weeks. I'm worried that the Quentin Johnston experience might be over.
Same. I'm right there with you. I was not one to buy in the first place. You know, I think the best case scenario for him is you get a couple of spike weeks. If they happen in the soon enough or near enough term, you can potentially flip him in the trade market as a sell high candidate, but realistically, it's going to be up and down for the duration of the season in my mind.
Well, let's move on to some guys that may have underperformed, but we're more interested in buying low on, whether it's in the trade market, whether it's off the waiver wire, some guys that we're definitely looking to potentially capitalize on poor performances and maybe underpay to acquire. We'll start at quarterback, and this is a name that I put on, so I'll give you my argument for it. And that's Tennessee Titans quarterback Cam Ward. Ward, listen, he's there's growing pains for a rookie, right? There's always growing pains for a rookie. And we did just go over his upcoming schedule, and man, it's a gauntlet, like you said, a lot of third and longs in that schedule. But the way that the Titans are working with him to just kind of cut him loose. I mean, the Tennessee Titans haven't, you know, limited his pass reps. It's not like they're out here, you know, limiting him to 25 throws a game. They're letting him throw it 35, almost 40 times a game. You know, he's racking up 250 yards or so each of the last 4 weeks. The red zone efficiency isn't there. The turnovers are a little bit too plentiful, but I think he's going to continue growing, and especially in like deep leagues, like super flex leagues, I think he's a viable quarterback too in some of those leagues, especially as we continue through these bye week cycles. He's got weapons. He's got, you know, Kamara Dike is coming on. I really like what they've done with him, lining him up in the slot, moving him around the formation, creating mismatches with DK specifically. Elik Iomanner, we've seen him pop off on the perimeter. And then I think there's a little bit of addition by subtraction with getting rid of Tyler Lockett, you know, getting these young guys more snaps. And Tyjae Spears is coming around. So I think that the Titans offense could be trending up, at least from a fantasy perspective. Maybe not in real life football, but keep your eyes on Cam Ward, especially in like dynasty formats. Don't dump him. I think he could be a legit, you know, development project as we move forward.
Yeah, I don't mind it, right? You know, for the fantasy context, opportunity goes a long way in dictating viability. And you know, while we say it tongue in cheek that the Titans are going to be facing third and long a lot, that means a lot of passing for Cam Ward, right? So you mentioned it doesn't seem like they're keeping a particularly tight leash on him. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him start to creep up, you know, at or north of even 40 pass attempts on a pretty regular basis. Tyler Lockett, you know, was out there a ton. He wasn't drawing very much target share or opportunity share. So if nothing else, just getting some of these younger, more explosive guys, more reps, more looks, I think that it very much so can point in the right way. And look, we are so quick to cast aside rookies in today's day and age. We have this expectation they're going to come in and immediately be productive and fruitful. And the reality is this guy is a handful of games into his NFL career, right? So like we very much so should factor in some progression for him as he gets more and more acclimated to the NFL game, as he adjusts to a new head coaching staff or an interim head coaching staff there in Tennessee, right? There, you know, little kind of notches and incremental gains you can stack up and build a pretty defendable case for, you know, a nice volume floor out of Cam Ward, if nothing else.
Well, you say volume floor. The one thing I do wish that we would see a little bit more of is the running game. He hasn't done it. So if we could get him scrambling a little bit, just maybe some design runs. I mean, I know the Tennessee offense is very vanilla, very simple right now, I'm sure. Or else they wouldn't be 1-7, but give this guy some freedom to run a little bit. I don't know. Maybe he's just not a runner. We didn't really see it a lot at Miami. But would love to see him build that floor a little bit, add that to his repertoire. Let's move on to running back, where we might have a buy low opportunity on one of the best running backs in the game, and that's Green Bay Packers, Josh Jacobs. 13 for 55, 13 for 33. He's not getting the yardage. Now, granted, he's finding the end zone, right? So maybe fantasy managers are looking at that and saying, you know, he's in the paint so much that there's no way I'm giving him up. But 13 for 33 and one score in prime time, you might be able to buy low, maybe trade a low-end RB1 or a low-end wide receiver one for Josh Jacobs in some places where it might make sense.
Yeah, and I don't mind it at all, right? I would be lying if I said it wasn't worthy of at least raising an eyebrow, the expanded usage of Emmanuel Wilson last week, right? If you look at it, their snaps and their opportunity share are about neck and neck and as close as they've been throughout the course of the season prior to this point. But a closer look, most of that work came to Emmanuel Wilson when they were trailing by at least two scores, right? Specifically, he out-touched Josh Jacobs 7-1 when that was the score differential, right? So, far more likely is the case where the Packers are going to be in more competitive games than the one that they were. And even with that being the case, right, this is still a circumstance where Josh Jacobs saw 16 opportunities in this game. So if that's his floor, and we all know how high his ceiling is, I absolutely love going out there and floating some buy low offers on Josh Jacobs.
Well, speaking of buy low offers, there's been a wide receiver who popped off certainly early in the season. We talked about him as a potential sell high candidate, but now he's underperformed in his past few games. And now we're talking about him as a buy low. That's Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Emeka Egbuka. A tough looking game log the past few weeks. Are you buying on Egbuka?
Absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of guys with hamstring injuries that have a way of lingering, right? We saw Egbuka as kind of a surprise return to that Monday night game against Detroit. And while he was able to suit up and get out there, did not look like the player that we saw for the early part of the season. And it seemed like last week in particular, still a little bit slowed by that. Hard to get on the same page with Baker Mayfield. A bit of a weird game script overall. I'm very much so willing to give Egbuka a pass. If you look at some of his opportunity stats in terms of the number of targets he's receiving over the last two games during this slump, the amount of air yards, he is among the league leaders with four end zone targets in these two games. Right, like the foundation that led him to perform the way he did to start the season is very much so still in place. It's just his productivity is lagging behind as he is again returning from this injury and finding himself in kind of odd game scripts. So if people are worried that he turned, you know, this was a flash in the pan to start the season, you absolutely should go out there and capitalize on it because he's going to be an asset for the stretch run.
And I know it may seem counterintuitive, but I think he's another guy who benefits from the return of Bucky Irving. I think with defenses having to focus a little bit more on Tampa Bay's running game. I think that will open some things up in the short to intermediate areas where Igbuka can thrive and kind of boost his productivity that way.
Yeah, don't mind it at all. High tide raises all ships.
We move on to Denver, where wide receiver Courtland Sutton has gone a couple games now without a touchdown. Hasn't scored since September. Has had a couple pop games, but still a little bit more up and down than maybe fantasy managers are used to. And, you know, coming off of a 4-catch, 67-yard performance against the belittled Dallas Cowboys defense, I really think this is a great buy low opportunity for one of the most underrated wide receivers in the NFL.
Completely agree, right? I mean, even this being the floor, quote unquote, you know, floating around double digits is not a bad set of circumstances to find yourself in with Sutton here. And you go back and you watch that tape, and he actually had a touchdown overturned by penalty. He was a fingernail away from hauling in another deep ball, right? So, you know, the opportunity is there, and that's ultimately where, you know, where the fantasy production comes from. And moreover, I mean, the arrow could not be pointing any higher for Bo Nix. So if you have an opportunity to attach yourself to that ascension, you should absolutely go out there and take it.
And the buy low window may extend past week 9. They face off against the Texans this coming week. It'll be Sutton, most likely shadowed by Derek Stingley, one of the toughest corners in the league. So maybe if he underperforms again, he gets the Raiders, Chiefs, Commanders, and Raiders over the next 4. There's some juicy matchups there that I'm looking to attack personally, but definitely a guy who is very much on my radar as a buy low candidate.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of guys that are finding that arrow pointing in the right direction. I like all of those calls. I find myself out there floating some offers on a guy like Jaylen Warren. I think that the Steelers and this defense are going to find themselves in a lot of passing scenarios, and Warren should be able to tap into a lot of the upside that we've seen from him in years past as a pass catcher. He seems to be the more trusted pass protector when the Steelers are in that circumstance as well. Also, specifically coming off of this Monday night game, I'm absolutely happy to go out and acquire as much Xavier Worthy as I can, right? People very much so believe that this is the Rashi Rice show now, and he's obviously come back in full force. But you're looking at a game even last night where Xavier Worthy saw 7 targets, right? And I think, you know, this offense is firing on all cylinders. So if people think that, you know, Xavier Worthy is turning back to a pumpkin now that Rashi Rice has returned, I think that is a false premise, and you can go take advantage of that.
I like that call. Let me rephrase. I dislike the Chiefs so much in reality.
Deeply.
But for fantasy, I love Patrick Mahomes this year. I have a lot of investment in Mahomes for the 2025 season. It has done me very well so far. So any ancillary pieces there in Kansas City that I can grab, especially a guy like Worthy at a discount, I'm all about it for sure. Well, that brings us to the end of our buy low section. We will take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk stocks up and sell high opportunities after this break. Welcome back to Ball Street, the QBL Stock Exchange. Buy low, sell high. That's business on Ball Street. Make sure you check out what we saw, our weekly column on QBList.com. It's our weekly shortcut to smarter fantasy football decisions. It actively helps make you a better fantasy manager. The QB List team of analysts watches every NFL game, going beyond the box score to deliver the most important observations. We provide actionable, contextual insights that shape your next lineup move. Make sure to check us out on QBList.com and in the fantasy football subreddit every Monday morning, where our analysts are constantly checking back throughout the day to answer your questions about really anything fantasy related, of course. Don't forget all of our weekly web content, including Start Sit columns, weekly rankings. We've had top 10 rankers in the industry on Fantasy Pros a few times in the last few weeks, including Eric, who was in the top 15, top 25 at least twice over the past several weeks. And we've expanded the QBL podcast network as well. Sunday Best, Waiver Wire, Weekly Forecast, and of course, Ball Street. We've got so much podcast content. Make sure to check that out. You can also follow us on YouTube, youtube.com/theQBList, where we're posting all of our podcast recordings. And make sure to follow us on TikTok at QB_list. Jay Felicio and the team are doing a great job putting together some YouTube shorts, some TikTok content, informative and entertaining over there on TikTok for sure. So make sure you check out all the places where you can find QB List. Tell your friends, not your league mates, about all the things that QB List has going on. Eric, talk to me about how'd you do in the rankings this week for Fantasy Pros?
Ooh, still pending, but if my spidey sense is accurate, I think I had a pretty solid week overall. So, like you mentioned, top 15 last week, including number one overall, I guess 2 weeks ago now, including number one overall in the running back category, banked a top nine. I think it was in week number four. And several of the other ranking squad members are finding themselves inside the top 10, inside the top 25 week in and week out. So make sure you are following those along. Those drop every Wednesday and they're updated every Saturday as we head into kickoff.
Yeah, you guys do an excellent job with those rankings, and they've certainly helped me set my lineup. Last week, it was Kamani Vidal, who I was kind of wavering on in that Thursday night matchup, threw him in the starting lineup, and he got me to where I needed to be, man. He looked great, and if it wasn't for you guys, I probably would have had him on my bench and been kicking myself. So, shout out to the rankings.
Nice way to start the week, sure. Too. The big Thursday night game is always fun, right?
Let's get into guys who had great performances this week. We'll get to Vidal in a little bit, but some guys whose stock has risen. Let's start at quarterback, where both Jordan Love and CJ Stroud had big weeks in week eight. Both of their stocks have risen. Are they QB1 kind of set it and forget it type guys yet?
Not for me, but they're close. Jordan Love is closer than CJ Stroud. As a beleaguered Texans fan, it's hard for me to put much faith in CJ Stroud. But what I will say is shout out to this coaching staff. They went jumbo a ton. They ran out a six lineman. They got him under center. If nothing else, it seemed like they are starting to put some adjustments in place. So he's moving up, not to the point where he's quite in QB1 conversation for me. For Jordan Love, he's a guy that is perpetually right on the cusp for me. This week, I have him as QB number 14, for example. He is a guy that has a multitude of weapons that are available to him, as we've discussed earlier in today's show. But he loves to throw the ball downfield and to throw the ball to the end zone, right? So if you don't have a mobile aspect to your game, if you're throwing balls into the end zone, that is kind of the next best thing. So he's always right in that like 10 to 14 range for me, depending on matchup every single week.
When we look at Stroud's performance this past week and kind of the way that the Texans offense was so fundamentally different from what we've seen previously, do you think that had anything to do with Nico Collins not being in the game and having to go a little bit more run heavy in their game plan?
Not necessarily. I think it's much more to do with their commitment to that jumbo personnel, and more specifically, getting him under center and moving the pocket. Right? They went a good five games trying to see if they can keep him in a shotgun position and get the ball out quickly enough or provide enough protection. They couldn't do either. So now they are moving the line. They are moving him away from that pressure, and it seems to be working. Granted, San Francisco 49ers isn't exactly the defense that we believe them to be heading into the season. But the fact that they are aware enough to make the adjustment, I think, is very much so what is promising. And moreover, Nico Collins being out of the way opened the door for some of these younger Iowa State guys, namely Higgins and Noel. I wouldn't be surprised if we see both of them start to cede opportunity away from the likes of Xavier Hutchinson and Christian Kirk, right? So the offense on the whole seemed to have a little bit more pop. If you combine that with their changes under center and their jumbo packages, that is what's most promising about the direction the Texans are heading.
How do you go through that whole thing and not mention Braxton Berrios?
Braxton Berrios. Great special teamer. Great locker room guy, too. First in, last out. Real lunch pail kind of guy, you know?
I love it. I love it. We'll move on to running back, where Breece Hall and Derrick Henry both had pop weeks. Hall led his team to an amazing comeback, got them their first win against the Bengals, threw a touchdown.
Yeah, right.
He's a five tool guy. I don't know. He's great. Breece Hall, tell me about him.
Breece Hall. nobody had him passing for a touchdown on their bingo card. Not only did he do it, he froze the defender with a nice little pump fake, and it just threw a laser to Mason Taylor that he yanked away. Like, it was maybe the most exciting passing touchdown of the Jets season coming from Breece Hall, who was absolutely in his bag, right? Making people look completely silly, putting them on skates in the hole, you know, pulling away from people, like showcase kind of game. I understand that he is rumored to be available and potentially out the door via trade. If he is not, I think he is the type of player that can be very impactful for fantasy managers, regardless of which team he's on. If he wasn't in such a pedestrian offense, could potentially be like Jonathan Taylor, Bijan Robinson levels of productivity out of him. So still some upside if he makes his way out of the Jets, but even if he stays put, he's got a lot to offer to his fantasy managers.
Yeah, it's watching him throw the ball, it's very clear that Justin Fields was his quarterback and taught him how to make back shoulder throws, because he threw it to the back shoulder of the defender. Mason Taylor went and just snatched it right off him.
Pink.
Derrick Henry had a great week in Baltimore. Two touchdowns for King Henry. Snoop Hundley under center instead of Cooper Rush, I think, had a lot to do with it. And now there's potential to get Lamar Jackson back at full strength on Thursday against a Miami defense that looked good against the Falcons, but that's kind of the only time they ever looked good. What do we think about Derrick Henry moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, the touchdown equity is going to be there, right? Candidly, I'm a bit worried that we're starting to see some of that efficiency fall off a little bit, which is perfectly fair. He's been playing in this league for a long time. That day is going to come for us all. But the volume should very much so persist, and he should be, option one and option two, at least when the Ravens are in close to the red zone and into scoring position. And they should be doing that far more often with Lamar Jackson due to return as soon as this week. So, efficiency be damned if you're going to get the type of volume and the type of touchdown equity that we will project for Derrick Henry.
I was extremely critical of Todd Monken, the OC, extremely critical of the Ravens offense through the first several weeks. I think at one point they were like 1-for-9 on goal to go plays from the one, in converting those into touchdowns this season. With Derrick Henry in your backfield, that's unacceptable. I think one of the biggest returns for the Ravens that might not be obviously in the news nearly as much as Lamar Jackson coming back is fullback Patrick Ricard returning in week 8.
Yep.
All pro fullback, just 300 pounds of man barreling down at the defense, usually the second level defender. It's going to be night and day for the Ravens running game with Ricard back in the game and back in the formation, I think. So definitely something to keep an eye on for Derrick Henry managers.
No doubt.
Wide receiver, there's a guy in Denver. We talked about Cortland Sutton being a buy low opportunity. Most of that is because some of his production has gone to this guy, Troy Franklin. What a game he had against the Dallas Cowboys. Two touchdowns, looked outstanding, a whole ton of targets. What do we think about Troy Franklin? What do we think about the Denver passing game in general?
Yeah, I think the fact that we're talking about Sutton as a buy low, Troy Franklin as a player who's on the rise, really tells you all that you need to know, right? This Broncos offense is firing on all cylinders. For me, I think it underscores the fact that Bo Nix's stock is about as high as can get and still seems to be pointing up somehow. With Franklin in particular, you obviously love the two touchdowns. You love even more that he's got 8 targets in this last game, 10 in the game prior, including 4 red zone looks, right? And he is just stacking up air yards left and right. So with players like this, where you see a ton of air yards in their profile, when they hit, they're going to hit big. And it seems like he has the counterbalance to that, where he not only has the air yards and the downfield opportunity, but he's also getting looks when they're in close to scoring position. So I think we're going to be looking at a 1 and 1A situation between Franklin, or I guess I should say Sutton and Franklin. And this is going to be largely on the arm of Bo Nix really rounding into form for the stretch run.
Yeah, if this was an offense coached by any other team, I think that I would be even more bullish on Franklin and Sutton and the ancillary pieces. But I just don't trust Sean Payton. Like, Sean Payton likes to get weird in the red zone with, you know, his backup tight end and his third string running back. Like, Jaleel McLaughlin is going to have a 2-touchdown game before the end of this season. Like, I just feel it. Like, it feels so gross, but like, that's what it feels like with Payton.
I forget who it was, but in this last game against Dallas, they threw a little flare route to a lineman who had to go completely horizontal to try to haul it in, right? So, point taken. We've all been snake bit by Sean Payton a time or two over the years.
Yeah, it's just he does some weird stuff in the red zone where I worry. Not enough to like drop Cortland Sutton or anything weird, but like just something to keep in the back of my mind, where I just don't entirely trust the play calling. But amazing so far, and I hope that the wide receivers keep up, especially, you know, Sutton and Franklin, because those are the guys that I have shares of in different places.
Absolutely.
All right, we move on to potentially my favorite performance of the entire weekend. Green Bay Packers tight end Tucker Kraft was amazing on Sunday night for the Packers. 2 touchdowns against the Steelers in prime time. Looked like an absolute monster, capped off National Tight Ends Day with an exclamation point of all exclamation points. He could be George Kittle's little brother, and we just don't know it. What do we do with Tucker Kraft other than just plug him in as tight end 1 and go forward?
Yeah, you hold on for dear life, right? In a crowded and murky receiving core for the Packers, Tucker Kraft and his role as a touchdown threat seems to be the only constant, right? He is currently sitting as the 6th ranked tight end in terms of target share, just under 21%. But if you talk about red zone target share, he's number 1 with a bullet. 32% red zone target share is absolutely insane in 2025. So to the effect that you believe the Packers can move the ball effectively on offense, you also believe that Tucker Kraft is going to have legitimate scoring opportunity week in and week out. And it's a very short list of tight ends you can make that type of statement about.
Yeah, and he's absolutely a red zone maven, like you said. He's outstanding. He's so good after the catch. Like, his yak is unbelievable. He just runs angry, man. He's so much fun to watch. We'll move on to some guys who may have had great performances, but we might be interested in selling high. And we'll start with the Chargers, one of the names we mentioned earlier this segment. That's running back Kimani Vidal. Like we said, Vidal, 23 carries, awesome volume, 117 yards and a score on Thursday night against the Vikings. But at some point, Omarion Hampton's going to come back. Maybe we see Hassan Hoskins at some point. There's a lot of mouths to feed in this passing game. Justin Herbert is running for 60 yards a game, like a long-haired gazelle out there. What do we do with Kimani Vidal, and what should we look to get in return if we are looking to move him?
It's tricky because Omarion Hampton brought a lot of hype and excitement around his name in draft season and the opportunity that was afforded to him when Najee Harris went out for the year with an Achilles injury. So everyone knows that Omarion Hampton is looming. So it's going to be hard to get the type of value that you think you might be able to out of Kimani Vidal, right? The reality is, I think you have to be targeting teams that you know, have recently lost a guy like Cam Scadabo, or are in the throes of Bi-Mageddon part two and need to plug someone in this week. If that's the case, I think you can probably get, you know, a kind of fringy wide receiver two type of return, you know, maybe a high end or an upside wide receiver three with a little bit of a depth piece in return. But realistically, everyone knows what you're doing when you knock up for them and ask if they're interested in Kamani Vidal. So just temper your expectations and know that if you want to get anything for them, this is probably the last week where you can still do it.
We'll stay at running back. And one of the names that has been a top running back all season, so there might be some skepticism as to why he's listed in sell high, is Buffalo Bills running back James Cook. And this might be something that even we disagree on. But one of the reasons that I'm looking at Cook as a sell high name, and when I say sell high, like the return has to be elite. Like we're talking like I need a legit plug and play wide receiver one. I need like a low end RB1 plus. Like I need at least an elite starting piece or two starting pieces to get rid of James Cook. So I'm not just putting him on the trade block and kicking him to the curb. But he's a guy who the Bills offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, has actively said, you know, we're trying to get our other running backs involved. We're trying to make sure James Cook is healthy in December, in January. And there's some touchdown variance to James Cook's games too. We've talked about his touchdown numbers potentially coming down after last season. Well, they've carried over, you know, he's scored quite a bit. But Josh Allen is still there. Josh Allen is still, in my opinion, the Bills' goal line running back. They've already talked about trying to get other guys involved. Ty Johnson is a perfectly competent passing down back. I think that Cook could fetch you a pretty penny on the trade market if you're stacked at running back and willing to part with him for some other pieces, improvements elsewhere in your roster.
I agree that he could fetch you a pretty handsome return, and I won't push back against the premise itself, right? You know, your case is bang on, right? The likelihood of touchdown variance or regression showing its face was the storyline for James Cook and why people were concerned about drafting him heading into the season. And now here we are as he sits, I believe, as the running back 6 or 7 on total points, but also has managed to find his way into the end zone 7 times, right? So, you know, just statistically, that should normalize back out. But the biggest thing to underscore is before his coaches are trying to work in some of the other runners on his team, James Cook was only sitting there with a 60% snap share, 62% snap share, right? And it's just really hard to perform at this level if you're not on the field, you know, at least 65, 70, 75% of snaps. So, you know, the floor is very real, whether it is the game script where the Bills are blowing someone out, as they should do many times throughout the season, or they do, in fact, further limit his opportunity as they try to keep him fresh for the stretch run. So if you can get a guy that has similar upside and a much safer floor, that's who I would target if I was shopping around James Cook.
Yeah. And the other thing with James Cook that is a red flag for me, he has one target across his last 3 games, and 2 of those were losses. So 2 of those are games that he should be heavily involved in the pass game, or at least the Bills should be passing because they're trailing in New England and Atlanta. And he had one target across those last 3 games. So that's something for me that they're talking about reducing his role slightly, and he's not getting pass game involvement. That's something that is at least raising an eyebrow if I have him on my rosters.
Totally agree.
We'll stick to running back. Ramondre Stevenson and Travion Henderson. It's kind of just a weird situation in New England backfield with Henderson kind of having finally a good game, like not even a great game, just a good game in that backfield. What do we do with those two guys? And are we selling high on either of them? Are we buying high on either of them? What is your thoughts on the Patriots backfield?
I think the sell high window for Ramondre Stevenson is probably pretty close to closed. Kind of like we were talking about with Omarion Hampton, plenty of hype around Trevion Henderson, and everyone is looking for any glimmer of hope to hang on to, which very much so colors my disposition on him, right? The fact that they gave him a good amount of work coming into the coming out of halftime through the second half. And also, because he fumbled the ball, and apparently that's Mike Vrabel's love language, maybe he'll just become the de facto bell cow in this backfield, right? But on a more serious note, any momentum moving in the right direction represents a significant change for Trevion Henderson. So you have to be excited about it. You can probably still get him for cheaper than you realistically should be able to, but those managers that still have him have been hanging on for dear life, right? So they are going to clutch to this optimism. You know, maybe if a few weeks ago you could get him for 35 or 40 cents on the dollar, now it's probably like 65 or 70 cents on the dollar, but still decent value if you want to go spin the wheel.
Yeah, it's kind of a unique situation, right, where you only have Trevion Henderson on your roster if you believe in Trevion Henderson.
Correct.
Like, and you're only trying to sell Trevion Henderson if you don't believe in Trevion Henderson. But if you don't believe in Trevion Henderson, he's not on your roster. So it's kind of a moot point, I guess,
The reality of the circumstance, right? The only people who are still rostering him just by nature, by definition, value him more than most anybody else in your league.
Right. So the only situation in which you could probably sell high and you don't believe in him and would want to sell high is if you somehow scooped him off the waiver wire and try to trade him back to the guy who originally dropped him, which is such a niche situation and such a spiteful thing to do. another guy who's been on this sell high list quite a few times, and he keeps coming back to this list because he keeps scoring touchdowns. That's Dallas Goedert, Philadelphia Eagles tight end. Another two touchdowns this week. And now, granted, they weren't on those weird underhand shovel passes at the goal line. So they're a little bit different. But, I mean, touchdown regression's got to be coming for this guy, right?
You would think so, right? I mean, he's at a point where, like, a third of his receptions have gone for a touchdown. So just statistically, he very much so should regress back to the mean. But I've been making this case for 8 weeks now, and he's been making me eat it, right? So maybe this is just one of those outlier seasons. I tend to err on the side of numbers, and that makes Dallas Goedert a pretty clear sell high candidate.
I mean, we talked about him being a sell high after he went for 9, 110, and 1 against the Giants. Now, that was like the peak of all peaks. I don't think he'll have another 11 target game this season or in his career, frankly. But the way he finds the end zone, it's so peculiar. And for a position where you're really looking for a catch and fall down in the paint kind of guy, there's a case to be made for holding him.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is tied to the fact that he plays tight end, right? So, like, the floor for him, you know, the weeks where he's not finding the end zone is, like, 5 or 6 PPR points, which describes all but about 3 or 4 tight ends across the league, right? So, you know, if it's really just a matter of expectations. If you can find someone that believes that he is going to continue scoring and scoring touchdowns at this rate, you almost have to go out there and move off of him, because realistically, you know, if not holding on to him, you're not really losing anything on the downside, but clearly there's scoring upside there that can help you when those spike weeks happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. There's places that I have him that I've held him, and I have looked to trade him because, for example, the one league where I have him, I have Aronde Gadsden sitting behind him. And like, what do I need two of them for? I can only start one, and or at least in that league, it makes sense to only start one. So trying to improve the rest of my roster instead of having a big name on my bench makes sense. But we'll see what happens with that for sure. Who are we buying high or holding after week 8 performances. I have a couple names on here. What are your thoughts as far as guys that you are not selling no matter the price?
Yeah, this is tricky, right? I'll play some of the hits with, you know, guys that I believe to be certified league winners, you know, guys like JSN and Puka Nacua, both returning from their bye weeks. You know, you mentioned this player as someone whose stock is pointing up. I'll double down and say that Breece Hall is absolutely on that short list of players that I want on my roster no matter what, right? His productivity and profile, you know, makes him situation proof, makes him game script proof, right? Like, does everything that you're looking for in terms of a foundational player. And this arguably isn't high because he's coming back from a extended absence. But I also think that Lamar Jackson falls right into that category, right? Like, the Ravens come back and they have to swashbuckle their way through maybe the easiest stretch run schedule to get back into playoff contention. And it is going to be on the back of Lamar Jackson in my estimation. So those are guys that I am absolutely either holding on to for dear life or willing to pay full freight to go out and acquire in this fantasy stretch run.
Well, two guys I put on the list, very similar opinions on them. I think Devon Achane is legit. I think that his usage and productivity is going to be consistent regardless of who's calling the plays for Miami. I think that he is more valuable in the passing game than he is, or as valuable in the passing game as he is in the running game. And with how poor Miami has been, they're going to be trailing. And I want Achane in those game scripts. I want him because he's going to be on the field. Although they have incorporated Ollie Gordon a little bit here and there in the passing game is a little bit scary, but I'm all aboard the Achane train, the Achane Express, the A train. I don't know. There's something there. I'm not finding it, but there's something there. And then another name that this seems like a no-brainer, like without context, this is like probably the worst fantasy analysis on the market right now, but Ja'Marr Chase, like, this dude went from being the consensus number one overall pick to a get him off my roster right now to back to being a number one wide receiver in the league. An immense amount of volume with Joe Flacco under center. I think the past 3 weeks, it's been like a combined, like 56 targets or something crazy. So Ja'Marr Chase is a, like, if you pick number one overall and you took Chase, you feel a lot less dumb now than you did about 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, I believe he's currently sitting as the wide receiver one, depending on your format. Right. And to your point, over the last three games puts him on a pace to break just about every target, reception, receiving yard, and touchdown record, maybe not touchdown record, that has ever stood within the NFL, right? So that type of volume is elite, and you couple that with a guy who is arguably the most dangerous player in the league with the ball in his hand, and that's exactly what you're looking for from this profile player. So maybe there's someone out there who has Chase and feels like they've caught lightning in a bottle with Joe Flacco, who is, you know, ancient and is going to shrivel and kind of end the year with a whimper and wants to move on. You know, if you find yourself in that circumstance, do not be shy about unloading the clip to go out and acquire Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, you got willing sellers out there. You just pay market price and you smile and you give them whatever you got in your pocket and you take him and you go and win your fantasy championship. That's just how it works.
No doubt.
I love that. Eric, we made it through another episode of Ball Street. We went overtime, but that's all right. We'll edit some of this out. Talk to the people. Tell them where they can find you and your work.
Everything I've got my hands in rolls up into my Twitter page at FantasyNav. Part and parcel, that is all of my work over at the QB list. Like we mentioned before, part of the renowned rankings team that has been red hot here in the 2025 season. Also writing up some deeper league waiver targets, parsing through some statistics to identify where players may be fool's gold or actually legitimate contributors, and writing up some defensive streamers that you can stash for a 3 or 4 week stretch.
Beautiful. I'm Brett Ford. You can find me at Fade That Man on Twitter. You can find me in the QBList Discord. Usually just vibing, loving life after that Monday Night Football win, at least in the fantasy streets. Find me on What We Saw every week. What We Saw comes out on Monday mornings. We're in the fantasy football subreddit answering your questions. And you can also find me on Pitcher List every now and then. I'll be recording a show with Scott Chu, Hacks and Jacks, with our way too early mock draft for next baseball season. So that'll be fun as well. So we'll see you where we see you, man. Eric, thanks again for joining us, and we'll catch you next week on another episode of Ball Street.